Did you know nearly one-third of supplement consumers in the U.S. are unsatisfied with the current immune-supporting drinks on the market? Help your consumers get the products they want with Immuse, the novel, clinically researched postbiotic that activates our body's natural defenses at the cellular level for year-round immune support. Formulate with the immune health ingredients backed by 30-plus research studies. Learn more at immusehealth.com. That's Immuse, I-M-M-U-S-E, health.com.
Hello, and thanks for tuning into Taste Radio, the number one podcast for the food and beverage industry. I'm editor and producer Ray Latif, and you're listening to episode 209, which features an interview with Trey Zeller, the founder of pioneering whiskey brand Jefferson's Bourbon. Just a reminder, if you like what you hear on Taste Radio, please share the podcast with friends and colleagues. And of course, we'd love it if you could review us on the Apple Podcasts app or your listening platform of choice. It's one of the world's most respected whiskey brands, but early into the development of Jefferson's Bourbon, founder Trey Zeller could barely give away his products. Consumers' appreciation and demand for high-quality premium bourbon were still years away when Trey launched Jefferson's in 1997. In the time since, however, he's emerged as one of the industry's most innovative and forward-thinking entrepreneurs, having introduced novel and highly experimental methods for maturing whiskey. A prime example is Jefferson's flagship expression, which is aged at sea, an approach that produces a complex flavor profile resulting from exposure to temperature fluctuations. In 2006, Jefferson's was acquired by sales and marketing firm Castle Brands, which in turn was acquired by spirits conglomerate Pernod Ricard last year. Today, the brand sells over 100,000 cases annually of its small batch bourbon and rye whiskey, and Trey maintains his stewardship of Jefferson's as its chief strategist. In the following interview, he spoke about navigating the evolution of the whiskey category, how he determined his highest value in the company, and why he doesn't consider himself a distiller. He also discussed initial criticism of Jefferson's approach to innovation, balancing consumer demand for diversity and predictability, and whether he has any regrets about selling the company prior to the bourbon boom of the past decade. Hey folks, it's Ray with Taste Radio. I'm going to call right now with Trey Zeller, who's the founder of Jefferson's Bourbon. Trey, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day here in Kentucky.
Indeed, Kentucky, well known for its bourbon. How long have you been in Kentucky?
Well, I was born in Kentucky, so I've been here most of my life. I was gone for about a dozen years. Other than that, this is what I've called home.
What were you doing in those dozen years that you were out of the state?
Oh, I was all over the place. I went to school in New Orleans, moved to Washington, D.C. for a while, Charleston, South Carolina, Colorado, out on the West Coast. So various things, but most recently, before I moved back here to start Jefferson's, I was in the medical distribution business.
Gotcha. So what led you to craft distilling, or what now is called craft distilling, but back in 97, when you, 1997, that is when you founded the brand, you know, what brought you to this industry?
You know, it was really leaving here that brought me to it. Growing up in Kentucky, you assume everybody drinks bourbon. Bourbon's just part of your culture. If you went to my grandmother's house, she didn't ask you what you want to drink. Rather, how do you take your bourbon? Everything that she cooked with was smothered in bourbon. And it was going to these different places that, you know, back in the early 90s, there wasn't bourbon available. You might find Jim Beam, Wild Turkey, Maker's Mark, if you were lucky. And, you know, I'd come home and drive past warehouses that I knew were full of great old bourbon that was either evaporating off into nothing or being blended into a four-year-old and wasn't being showcased. At the same time, single malt scotches, specifically with age statements, were on fire. And I thought that bourbon was a superior product. So I started talking to people that were friends of mine in the industry and asking them if I could get a hold of some of these barrels, that I'd bottle it up and take it to market, and people would be clamoring for it once they found out how good it was.
And it is very good. It is actually outstanding whiskey. You know, Jefferson's has won many awards, a lot of acclaim for the quality and the innovation that you've brought to the bourbon category. But when you were starting out, I mean, what was your initial vision for Jefferson's? Do you have a business plan?
I had a business plan. I had many business plans that came and went like the dodo bird. And, like I said, when we first started bottling up this great product, you know, we were selling 15-year-old bourbon for $50. And people thought that was just way too much money. It was a totally different consumer at the time. People looked down their noses at Kentucky bourbons at the time. I went to the first whiskey fest with Julian Van Winkle, and we had a deal where you could buy five cases of his and get a case of mine no charge, or buy five cases of mine and get a case of his no charge. And we didn't do a dozen deals between the two of us. So it was just a totally different climate. But my idea was buy up enough of this product, sell it, and you know, go ahead and raise enough money that I could build a distillery and start distilling my own stuff. But as I went around talking to the different distillers, they all told me the same thing. Somewhere between 65 and 75% of what bourbon is, or the heart and soul of bourbon, comes from the maturation process. And I thought, well, everybody's maturing it the same way. I think there's room to manipulate the maturation process to make the bourbon different. And you know, at the same time, I was thinking, what am I going to do? Yeah, I can't out Jimmy Russell. Now, these great distillers from the, there was only eight distilleries in Kentucky, and that was making 99% of the country's bourbon. And they had, you know, generations of knowledge, and I wasn't going to out distill them. But what I could do is take their base and start manipulating it one way, shape, or form by putting more time, money, and effort into it to hopefully enhance it.
And when you're talking about maturation, for our listeners at home who are not familiar with the maturation process, you're talking about barrel aging.
That's correct. Yeah. And yeah, what's really unique about bourbon, everything comes from once it hits that barrel. It goes in clear like water, and it really gets its character and its soul from the time it hits the wood and what happens within it, within the wood.
You mentioned to me that you don't describe yourself as a distiller, and you just explained why. You know, there are very experienced, highly knowledgeable distillers out there who know the business inside and out. You mentioned Jimmy Russell. Did it take a little bit of swallowing of pride? Did it take you saying, okay, well, I've got to put my ego in my pocket to know that I'm not going to be great at this, but I can be great at something else?
Not really, because I didn't really have aspirations to be a distiller. To me, that wasn't as interesting as seeing as what else I can do. Because I think you've got to have a great base, and that's what these distillers do, and that's what our distiller does. And their main job is to keep everything very consistent. Once they've figured out that recipe and you know, your yeast and that, you want to just make the same thing over and over. And that's, I've got too much ADD that I couldn't do that. And so I knew that they were out there and that our distillers could do it as well. And you've got to have this great base and you've got to have great juice going into the wood, because if you don't, then you know, it doesn't matter what you do to it. It's just not going to be good whiskey. But once you've got that and once you mature it, then you can start manipulating it. You know, we're not trying to cheat the process or accelerate it. It's just take this great base and then enhance it.
You're not a distiller. Do you still have to be an expert in all aspects of distilling to understand what that liquid, what that juice can look like after it's been matured?
Yes. I don't know if I have necessarily say an expert, but I certainly understand the process. And now, you know, 22 years later, I have a very good idea of what, you know, what goes in, what's going to come out 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 years down the road.
So as I mentioned, Jefferson's is known for pushing the envelope with innovative ways to blend and cask mature whiskey. What was the industry's initial reception to your strategy of innovation, or I wouldn't call it necessarily a strategy, but your approach to innovation?
Well, when I started, there was the old guard, and I don't think they were very receptive to new people coming in. You know, they wanted to protect what they had. And, you know, you would hear most people in the distilling community talk about their, you know, my dad did it this way and his dad did it. So it was built on heritage and tradition, which is a great thing. But for instance, when we came out with our Jefferson's Ocean, and the first time we did that, we put new fill barrels on a ship for 3.5 years and aged it. So it, different than how we do it now, which is taking 6 to 8 year old bourbon and then putting it on the ship. There were a lot of kind of skeptics that say, well, this isn't bourbon, this isn't aged traditionally, when in fact, it really is. That's how whiskey turned into bourbon in the first place. It was once we distilled it, and people were all drinking whiskey straight off the still until, you know, there's a lot of history that goes behind it, including the whiskey tax and the whiskey rebellion. But when people started shipping whiskey from Kentucky down our river system, then putting it on boats in New Orleans and sailing it around Florida and up the East Coast, that's when whiskey turned to bourbon for the first time. It was put in those barrels and allowed to age for the first time. So it really, our Jefferson's Ocean was much more like it was in the beginning than how bourbon is traditionally aged and matured now.
How did you convince the naysayers and critics?
Not really. We did eventually, but originally we just said, taste it, try it. And almost everybody that's written about it says the same thing. When I heard about it, I thought it was a gimmick. And then I tried it. And then I see the beautiful flavors that come out of it. And then after that, we historically recreated that journey for the first time in like 150 years and sent two barrels down the rivers, and we encountered three hurricanes. We had four different boats, and it took a year to the date that we took off to land in New York. But when we did, we had bourbon that was only a little over a year old that was as dark as a 16-year-old bourbon, and unbelievably smooth. So it convinced me that that's what made bourbon proliferate in Kentucky, was the journey that it went on initially, and that's why people demanded the bourbon from Kentucky and paid much more for it. So we were able to back up kind of, you know, the hypothesis of it, but initially it was try it. And when people tried it, they really enjoyed it.
Mike, I heard you're starting a beverage company.
Ray, let's say I was. Do you have any suggestions for a complete partner?
Absolutely. Ingredion. Ingredion is a leading global plant-based ingredient solutions provider to the food and beverage industry, with a diverse portfolio including sweeteners and sugar reduction technologies, plant-based proteins, starches, and hydrocolloids.
Of course. Ingredients 360 Value Framework delivers value according to your brand's specific needs through consumer well-being, environmental impact, and value creation. Ingredients market research and insights for innovation can help uncover opportunities within the beverage space. For instance, figuring out what added health benefits consumers need. They have a network of technical experts that will help you solve your pain points to get you to market faster. With Ingredient, you gain a partner who helps you deliver the total beverage experience that keeps consumers coming back.
To learn more about Ingredient, head to tasteradio.com/beverage.
The New Beverage Showdown returns to BevNet Live in New York City on June 12th and 13th. Pitch your beverage startup in front of a panel of expert judges, our live audience, and viewers tuning into the live stream. To learn more, visit bevnetlive.com.
I think this brings up an interesting point about predictability and consumers' desire for predictability. I mean, brands represent, and legacy large brands represent, safety, right? I mean, people know what they're going to get because they've gotten it the same way for years and years. You know, if innovation is an important part of your business, how do you do it while maintaining that predictability?
I think what they're going to find is that we're going to have consistently very high quality juice, and that it's going to be incredibly consistently inconsistent, as in, you know, our Jefferson's Reserve is a very traditional kind of quintessential bourbon taste. The rest of our expressions are not. And so it's going to be consistently inconsistent across our expressions. That's what they're going to find. And those that know us, and we're still very much a discovery brand, know that we are going to be inconsistent from expression to expression, and that they're going to be hopefully pleasantly surprised on how it's going to come out.
And this notion of inconsistency is more specific to alcoholic beverage brands than it is otherwise. People expect wine vintages to taste different from year to year. Craft beer, in some cases, it's going to be a little different from batch to batch. And is that something that consumers are okay with from your perspective, or are people looking for more consistency these days?
Well, I think within each expression, we've got to be very consistent. So if they pick up, a bottle of our Jefferson, well, actually, that's a bad example because the Jefferson's Ocean changes quite a bit. But a bottle of Jefferson's Reserve that is going to taste very similar bottle after bottle. But within our portfolio range, you're going to get very different flavors, all bourbon. However, we're pushing or massaging the juice in each of these different expressions in a different manner, which are going to give different flavor outcomes. So that's where the inconsistency comes from. So we want to be very consistent within each expression, just the product range. We want it to be very diverse.
I can hear your passion for the process. I can hear your passion for bourbon just in our conversation. And I'm sure when you started out, a lot of your time was spent focusing on the production, focusing on making the best product possible, literally getting your hands in there and working the process. As the company evolved and started to grow, how did you determine your highest value? How is your skill set best deployed?
So I think, if you look at how we've evolved, and now we've been acquired by Pernod Ricard. So we worked to see how I would continue on with them and where I am today. And I think this is how I can best use my skills is I am chief strategist, which is in charge of kind of the overall strategy of the brand, innovations, and quality assurance. So, it's one I've got to continue to make sure what's going into the bottle is of the utmost quality. Two, they really want to try to keep us as entrepreneurial and innovative as possible. They actually tasked me not to become Pernod Ricardized as much as possible so I can be nimble and still look at things from a different lens. And I've always said, I'll never create a brand or an expression out of a boardroom. It always comes out of experiences. And we've been lucky enough to collaborate with some great people who are experts in other fields to create great brands. So it's creating these experiences that evolve into brands or expressions that I think is how I can best use my skill set.
You mentioned that Jefferson's is now part of the Pernod Ricard family. Pernod Ricard, a large conglomerate that owns a lot of different spirit brands, wine brands. Prior to joining Pernod, Jefferson's was acquired in 2006 by Castle Brands. What was the interest in aligning with Castle Brands, and why was it the right fit for Jefferson's?
Well, you have to remember, back in 2006, bourbon had not gone through the renaissance and become the popular category that it is today. And at the time, I was really a one-man show. So I was overseeing the production, the marketing. We really didn't have any marketing dollars. And I was out there traveling around the country trying to sell this. So I needed an infrastructure, a platform. And Castle Brands had that small platform that was attractive because they also had no one that had my kind of expertise in the field. So they allowed me, almost complete autonomy with the brand. Castle Brands was basically a sales and marketing platform for spirit brands. So they had Gosling's Rum, Blaney Limoncello, so a few small brands like that. So it allowed me to, one, have national distribution. They had a small sales force that they could get our product distributed. And again, they allowed me to have the autonomy to grow the brand the way I thought best. And that freedom allowed us to come up with a lot of innovations. I think that, you know, if I was with a bigger company at that time, before there was really much innovation at all in the category, that it would have been stifled. When we decided to partner with Esquire magazine to make a barrel-aged cocktail before there were bottled cocktails, or put barrels on a ship and see what would happen, I think that would have been shut down in committee and, you know, larger organizations. But luckily, you know, we were able to get some of these expressions out at that time, and they showed success. And I think that kind of opened the doors for, you know, our consumer, which was much different today than it was back then. Then it was really the old guard drinking bourbon, where today, you know, it's such a different consumer. And that consumer is now looking to see how we can push the boundaries of what bourbon is, as long as we don't bastardize it.
Do you have any regrets about selling the company back in 2006? I mean, you mentioned that the boom for bourbon, the real interest in this category has exploded only within the last, say, 3-4 years. You know, do you feel like you, I guess, pressed the sale button a little bit too quickly?
Oh, well, you know, it doesn't do any good to look in the rearview mirror, and you never know what would have happened. But, you know, certainly you look at what we sold Jefferson's for and think that I would have held on to it a little bit longer. I would have personally done a little bit better with it. But, and, you know, I may have looked at doing it in a different manner and maybe raised capital rather than selling, or kept more equity, one of the two. But like I said, it doesn't do any good to look in the rearview mirror. And when you look back at it, it's allowed us to grow to where we have, which, you know, I think we're the only brand doing over 80,000 cases at $50 and above, and we'll do over 100,000 cases this year. So we're on the path to what I hope we will accomplish, which is becoming a global brand that has, you know, great respect for it, and that is recognized, you know, worldwide as one of the great spirit brands.
Mike, I was just in the kitchen and I saw this really cool THC-infused beverage brand called Eighth Wonder.
Ah, chill brand. They make cannabis bevs as well as beer and spirits. The product you're talking about is a super tasty cherry limeade cannabis seltzer called Lil Bit. And did you know Eighth Wonder was acquired last year by Houston's BioCity Hemp?
Yes, I did. That deal created a world-class, vertically integrated cannabis and craft beverage company. Bio's science-based processes for extracting THC from hemp have made the company the gold standard for cannabis products across Texas and beyond.
Bio's cannabis portfolio includes Eighth Wonder as well as Howdy and Beach Break, all of which are distributed throughout Texas and Louisiana.
You can learn more about all these brands at eighthwonder.com, siphowdy.com, and sipbeachbreak.com.
On June 12th and 13th in New York City, hear from Icelandic Glacial, Lemon Perfect, GoPuff, Sachet, Diageo Ventures, and Lowe's Foods during the leading event for the beverage industry. Save on BevNet Live tickets through April 26th. Just visit bevnetlive.com.
How did people get to this point? I mentioned earlier that there's been so much more interest in whiskey, and particularly bourbon, in our country and all over the world, and over the last 3-4 years. What are some of the reasons that we've seen this interest, this surging interest in brown spirits and bourbon?
People say there was kind of a perfect storm of things that happened, and it happened around 2008. It really brought bourbon to where it is today. One, people were looking for value, and bourbon was held the value back in 2008. They also talk about the Mad Men effect and how it was cool to drink bourbons and rye again. And then classic cocktails certainly came back. And mixologists were going back to old recipe books that, you know, most every cocktail was made with bourbon and rye back then. But I think more so than anything, it's our smartphone. It's our phone that you can look up and dig in. There's so much information and history that you can find out about each bourbon brand, each bourbon distillery. And it allows people to really geek out and share knowledge. And people transferred from being a brand loyalist consumer. My great uncle is a great example. I would offer him all the Jefferson's Reserve he wanted. No trade. Thank you. I like my Jack Daniels. And that's what he drank. You don't see that consumer that much anymore. Today, it's very promiscuous. They've got a number of bourbons on their back bar, and they want to share that. And they want to share the knowledge behind those brands and why those brands taste the way they do and what the history is of them. And it's kind of getting intimate with it. And where you had the old traditional brand loyalist consumer, you're not sharing something, and it's not as intimate. I think that's really what you're seeing now. It's all about sharing the story, sharing the experience, sharing the taste of a great bottle.
Your role with Jefferson's has evolved since you started the brand in 1997, as you mentioned, currently with the Pernod Ricard family. You are perhaps the most important person in the room at a time because you are a steward. You're the steward of the Jefferson's name. I'm sure it means a lot to you, and I'm sure it means a lot to Pernod Ricard. What's the most important aspect of the brand to this point? How do you protect it as that steward?
Well, one, I've got to share my passion for it. And as I told them when I came aboard, this is my baby. It's 23 years now in the making, and I do have a hell of a sense of pride that goes along with it. And luckily, from the top down at Pernod, what I've heard is, Trey, we want to keep this an entrepreneur brand, keep it innovative, and keep the passion that you brought to the brand, that spirit alive. And it's fun to share that and see people that have worked on different brands catch fire with the passion that we've got behind Jefferson's and help carry the flame for us. And it's fun to do that. There's a lot of brands that no longer have somebody living that's still tied to the foundation of the brand. And when you can have somebody that has lived it from day one, there's a passion that you just typically don't have in brands that don't have that. And I think it is contagious, and I think it helps helps other people get behind it and not only establish that passion, but they want to carry the torch and pass it along as well.
I asked you at the top of our conversation about your vision for the brand. What's your current vision for the brand? 23 years later, you've seen how Jefferson's has grown and developed on the market. What do you want to see for the next 20 years and beyond?
Well, I want us to continue to kind of push the boundaries of what bourbon is without bastardizing it. So we're continuing to tip our hat to that tradition. But I also want to make it more of a global brand. And I look at some of the great brands that are out there. Macallan comes to mind, and there's a sense of great pride that people have when ordering it. I would like to see that, on a global basis. I was lucky enough to kind of lead a symposium over in Vietnam last year, where the Vietnamese have a 93% Gallup poll rating approval of the United States. They drink a lot of whiskey. They drink virtually no bourbon. So if they love things coming from America, and if they love whiskey, why aren't they drinking bourbon? And what can we do to make them realize what a great spirit and great category it is? And that was extremely interesting to me, and I see so much potential over there that we can take these American brands and make it something that that they are very prideful over. So that I'm very interested in seeing what can happen globally with this category and this brand.
Do you have any plans to, or would you ever think about launching another bourbon or spirit company?
I have some ideas in my back pocket, and as long as the relationship with Pernod continues as it started and how we've talked, then you know, I really see what a great opportunity it is to be part of a company that can take this vision into a global reach. But if it doesn't seem like I can add the value that I have in the past or think I can, then I would go ahead and start something else.
Gotcha. And so it's going to stay in the back pocket for a bit.
Maybe so. Yeah. That being said, we've got lots of experiments going right now, and I think we've got a couple things that we will be launching in the next year or so that are really going to be very, very interesting.
Trey, I've been sipping on Jefferson's bourbon for some time. It's not now, not this morning, but in my years of legal drinking age, I've come to appreciate Jefferson's bourbon. It's a fantastic brand. Congratulations on everything you've done to this point. And, you know, I'd love to come and see how you guys operate at some point. I think that'd be amazing.
We would love to have you down, Ray, and I appreciate you continue to support us and consume our products. And hopefully we're going to continue to put out great, innovative products that bring interest into the category.
I'm sure you will. Once again, Trey, thank you so much for a great interview.
You got it, Ray. Have a great day. I appreciate you having me on.
You too. That brings us to the end of episode 209. Thank you so much for listening, and thanks to our guest, Trey Zeller. You can catch both Taste Radio and Taste Radio Insider on tasteradio.com, the Apple Podcasts app, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. As always, for questions, comments, ideas for future podcasts, please send us an email to ask@tasteradio.com. On behalf of the entire Taste Radio team, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.